This is the Limitless, the podcast between. This is Jason Horsley talking to the Greek. But the hottest time of dawn is in the evening when it feels like all the world is unchained.
Jason.
Hello.
Hello. I figured it's Jason or Jason. How are you, man?
I'm good. How are you doing?
Good. All right. You sound subdued. Are you and relaxed? What's on your mind other than your messages? And you seemed enthusiastic, and you sent me a pretty lengthy email, which years ago I would go over and answer your questions point by point, but I just gave you a couple of blanket statements. But nonetheless, thanks for the interest, I guess. I'm just saying that to be polite, you know.
I know. Yeah.
There is no... there's nothing going on. This is planet Earth. You know, once you've seen enough, you've seen it all without seeing it all. So, you know, so go ahead.
Well, how interested would you say you are in how what you do affects people?
Not much anymore, because it doesn't affect people.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's affected me.
Just like movies don't affect.
I wouldn't be talking to you right now if it hadn't had a... I don't want to use the word profound, because I don't want to go there just yet, but it's had a significant effect, let's say.
Oh, okay. You'll get over it.
It might even be disturbing my sleep. Well, I don't want to give you too much credit.
No, that's an easy way to think about it. One thing I want to just mention, I did forward the email to Sam, and he might have a chat with you as well, and his comment was... his questions are irrelevant because he's not noticing the obvious. And I said, well, why don't you discuss it with him? I don't need to...
That sounds like something you would say.
Yeah, and Sam, on the last side, he's been imploding. I call it implosion versus explosion, which when you look at an implosion and an explosion, they look very similar, but they're very different. One is an outward, one is inward, and then becomes outward because of the tension or the stress of the environment, right?
Mm-hmm.
Just like people are under the misunderstanding that nuclear devices explode. No, they don't. They just do what they do, which is they short out the dielectric environment, all you call static electricity. You know, when you walk on carpet and socks and touch a doorknob, mm-hmm. That's all it does. And depending on the environment, whether it's water, air, underground, the reaction that you see that you call an explosion is just the material in the immediate environment reacting to that stress, you see. So,
I don't really see. I mean, I could...
The reason I'm bringing this up is recently I've been having some discussions with people in nuclear physics, and it's the analogy there would be, let's say you have an automobile and you bring it to a mechanic for some work,
yeah.
And you give him a list of what you'd like done, and you give him the keys, and right before you leave, he says, by the way, can you show me what the steering wheel is?
Yeah. I've heard you.
What's going? Yeah, so they're on auto. One. Yeah, an airplane on autopilot. And what does that mean? There is a set analog of mechanical movements preset, with including the input of sensors to fly the plane. There is no such thing as an autopilot. Mm-hmm. It's relying on sensor feedback to an analogous mechanical movement you call programs, you know, whether it's punch cards or magnetic drives or digital, it's the same thing, right?
By the way, I should interrupt. I just forgot to mention I was recording this. Is that okay?
No, that's fine.
Okay.
Yeah. So what I would suggest is... when you, one of the things in your email was why you're doing this, and that's very, I've stated several reasons in the past, and one of the main ones is just to balance out the equation.
Mm-hmm.
There was a film, a Goodwill Hunting or something,
yeah.
In the Ivy League American University mathematics section, they would pose these long, abstract mathematical problems, and the janitor would just fill in the would solve the problem at night,
yeah,
and
yeah.
Professors would come in and they were baffled.
Yeah.
You don't have to be I used to do a lot of this type of rhetoric, if you could call it that, and diatribing and lecturing anonymously to people that would trick a lot. I once had a discussion with someone in industry, and he says, you wouldn't believe how much of what you've said is being used right now. and no credit, because if you go down to a pig farm and clean out the pigsty, so they're not waist deep in shit, but just hoof deep in shit, do you want the pigs to start telling each other, well, let's give the Greek credit for cleaning it out? No, you did it because it had to be done. You don't want any credit.
Right.
You don't even want them. It doesn't even matter if, you know, the acknowledgement is irrelevant.
Yeah.
I wish this could be done anonymously, but...
Well, I suppose you could use a voice disguise, and then you'd be pretty much there at that point. But then you'd lose a lot, right?
It's a little late for that now, because the content now would identify the source.
And I think, I mean, I was joking, because, I mean, there's something, one of the things you said recently, or you haven't said it recently, but I picked up on it recently, is about the quality of the character. And to me, that is the all essential element. I'm putting a bit too much emphasis in that, but that's my feeling, that's my sense, that's my experience in what I do. I only want to talk to people that I can experience the quality of their character by talking to them. I'm not really that interested in the information. And that's my dilemma with you, because your information is very provocative, it's very stimulating, it's tantalizing, it's titillating, it's unreferenced, it's unsourced. I don't know where it's coming from. I don't know time to verify or check all this stuff. I'm interested in you and where you're coming from and what your purpose is in doing this.
But if you listen a little more critically, which I'm not suggesting that you're not listening critically, right? I'm not suggesting that. Just a little bit more, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's like pouring a fine glass of wine. Just because you want more doesn't mean that you're having too much, right? Or too little. It just should be a little bit more in the glass, let's say, of critical thinking. Mm-hmm. What you will see, the reason I do cite sources is... one of the last things that mankind has yet to discover is the obvious. So when I bring up, for example, the biological vacuum in the body, I also give a minimum of two or three examples of how you can assess it yourself. I frequently give the analogy when I bring up that if we look at basic anatomy as provided by the academics, which is generally very good, you'll see that there's no absorption in the intestinal lumina, right? There's five impervious hydrophobic layers. And when you bring this up to the layman, you can provide that as a source. He'll say, well, I'm not a doctor. I don't know anything about the human body, but he's spending his whole life in one.
Yeah.
Right? So when I bring up, for example, timekeeping,
mm-hmm.
it's pretty obvious. I don't need to cite sources, which I can bury you in sources. I used to bring... sources in a way that Sam did very academically and almost to the point of pedantics, or pedanticism, if there's such a word. But I noticed that there's no reason for that. If you're saying that you're bringing forward the obvious, that means that it's self-evident,
mm-hmm.
you see. So all of the, if you noticed all the points that you listed, one of the things that prompted me to keep a very short answer to your email was when you brought up your opinion.
Mm-hmm.
Opinions don't matter. I think opinions made public and to stand as reference material should be faced with a very severe penalty.
Right,
almost
but isn't
to the
it,
point, almost to the point where harm can be brought upon the individual for doing that.
Okay, so but I mean? At what point does that become objective? The difference between one man's opinion and another man's objective statement, right?
Because an opinion is something you make, and an objectivity is something you arrive to.
Okay, but people arrive to opinions too, and their opinion is that their opinion is objective fact. I mean, the world is full of these people who think that their opinions are facts.
That's why we give the analogy to we, the collective we, whoever is free to use that. This your typical surface dwelling inhabitant has certain characteristics, and they are thus. When I call people morons or idiots or assholes or whatever, that is not intended to be a pejorative. I'm using it in a medical sense.
I know. I mean, I've heard you say that, but it still has the same impact as the word.
That's fine.
It has the same associations. People still hear it as a pejorative.
Well, it's done. I also try to do it organically, meaning, Nate, you know, when you say something organic, it means like you're letting nature take its course, right? You've heard that. Like, for example, I have a desk, and occasionally it'll be organized. And when it's organized and filed away with labels, you know how things are cataloged and organized, I get a sense of disorientation. because when it was not organized, I know everything on the desk was organically placed, meaning the bottom of the pile is much later on than the top of the pile, which is more recent, right?
Right, right, yeah.
Once it gets sorted by category, now I have to. I cannot use time as a reference anymore. I have to use the category, and it might be something distant I might not recall, and the item is lost, you see?
Mm-hmm.
Where I know that if the pile, if I haven't organized the desk in 3 months, I know the stuff on the bottom was what. If I want to know what I was doing 3 months ago, all I do is reach at the bottom of the pile. But once it's organized, I don't know what I was doing 3 months ago.
Okay. Well, what does this have to do with calling people morons?
This has to do with the objectivity. Yeah. And I do it in a way that's natural and organic. Like you were saying, this is a similar SOP of a cult.
Yeah.
Well, this is the anti-cult, and of course it's going to be recognized as a cult, you know. This has been brought up before, and I said, well, there's no other way to do it. I've tried to coach people who are interested in doing this, so I'm not involved, but they can't. So I do it naturally. In other words, cults are formed. I call the people that form cults or the cults form around. If you're familiar with Gustave Le Bon, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mentioned him. Okay, they're idiot. They're moron magnets, and I don't want to be a moron magnet. And
right.
The way you, magnets work is what people call attraction and repulsion, even though that's not really what's going on. So I'd rather repel the people from what they're used, and have them just objectify. See, if I tell you my opinion of you is a moron, this is just subject, hypothetically, mm-hmm. but here I have some really good information, you're going to leave the conversation saying, this was not a good interaction, but I got a good information. Where if you like someone, there's a concept of enamoring, there's a concept of kinship, there's
yeah,
a concept
yeah.
of affection,
but cults,
you tend to overlook that.
Cults
like parents
don't
do
only
a lot
form.
Of damage.
Cults yeah. don't only form around people pleasers, you know, but there's this sort of Stockholm cult syndrome, which is people like to be called morons. They like to be belittled.
The state uses that all the time.
Yeah.
They say they're here to benefit you, but at the same time, they have people in uniform and agencies that take your property and quote unquote abuse your rights, and people love it. Right? It's I call it schizophrenia mixed with amnesia. Right.
Mm-hmm.
So. But the Stockholm syndrome, again, that is someone who is based on lack of resolving things objectively. Give you an example. Years ago, I had dated, more than almost 30 years ago now, I dated a psychiatrist who was teaching at university. She was young, just had gotten her certification to teach. It was her first or second year teaching at university. And you would think that this is an upstanding individual that's got a pretty good grip on the field of psychiatry, right? Meaning what's proper mental health. And more than once, we would be taking a cab from where she was living to a restaurant in New York, and she would tell the cab driver to go down to the Lower West Side on a meatpacking district, and it was an S&M club, a sadomasochist club, where you take off all your clothes in a locker, and you choose to put on leather, whips, spikes, and all this, right?
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, I didn't partake, but when I told her I wasn't partake, she goes, well, I'll see you tomorrow or the next day. I'll call you. I'm staying.
Hmm.
This sounds like something out of your sci-fi movies, right, where you have the duel, Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So, and then she was complaining. Let me give you this is just an example of opinion and objectivity, right, because this can be objectified. She was complaining about something going on in the teacher's area. They have a teacher's area in the university, a lounge. And later on, she brought that up again. I was dating her for a couple of weeks on and off. But she brought this up a couple of weeks later that they apprehended the person that was the cause of what was upsetting all the women at the faculty, right? And I said, well, tell me about it. She goes, well, this man, one of the faculty, another psychiatrist teacher, was ejaculating in women's shoes. And women would go put on their shoes if they had a change of shoes, and there would be this, semen in there, right? It was very, And this is, again, these are the people that you're sending your children to be educated, right? So I thought her instance was very unique, but it turns out that the whole group was fucked up one way or another,
mm-hmm.
right? So you see what I mean about the organic cleaning out the pigsty and all of this other stuff. Now, I want to go back to some of the email stuff. I'm not in front of the computer right now, but I could be. I didn't say any of that stuff that you put in there, you know. Like, for example, dreams or implants, I never said that. That the discussing dreams is way down the line of comprehending that we're subject to external input.
Yeah, well, it's the blog even. I mean, it might not be the word implant. It might be plugins or something like that. But the
plug-in as a metaphorical, yeah. There's no hardware involved other than you having a body, because once you're disembodied, you're not capable of dreaming. You'll be in another realm when it wouldn't be called a dream anymore. Now you're in that realm, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so, but these things are... are you familiar with the metaphors I've brought up with Jack Fresco?
No, I'm not familiar with Fresco.
If we were to visit a society of headhunters, and we went to one of their homes and said to them, "Does it upset you that you have 5 shrunken heads?" And he'd say, "Yes, it does. My brother has 20."
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Is that man doing anything wrong, or believing, or desiring anything improper for his culture? No.
Mm-hmm.
Back in the days in the Colosseum, in the Roman Colosseums, which were built for entertainment for everyone, if you had traffic infractions, didn't pay taxes, or didn't sacrifice an animal to Hercules on what they call Sunday, they would imprison you and throw you to the lions for everyone to watch, and the lions would tear you apart, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the whole – it wasn't Christians, because Christianity didn't come up around a few hundred years later, so don't believe when people tell you they threw Christians to the lions. That's like saying – Christopher Columbus discovered America with an iPhone GPS. It sounds plausible to the young, but to those that know history, it sounds absolutely ridiculous, right? So if you were to visit the Colosseum when the crowds were let out of the stands, you would see a family with children, and the little boy would ask the daddy, he'd say, "Daddy, can we come next week to see the people thrown to the lions?" And the father would say, raising his hand to the child, "Only if you behave yourself."
Mm-hmm.
Is there anything wrong with them?
So how does this relate to dreams? Because, I mean, I thought we were getting to the dreams.
The dreams. Comprehending of that, if you are being bombarded, mentally modeled, anything you interact with, you, even if it's seemingly new information, you will never be able to learn it unless you can attach some part of it to something you've learned before.
Right, I understand that. Yeah.
So you've been told, in paganism, dreams are very important.
Mm-hmm.
Even the most, right, they say, "Well, what are the dreams?" And they have dream interpretation and all this, but they negate the source. And then in people think that the dreams are their own.
Mm-hmm. So how does that differ from how we're interpreting?
So is there anything wrong with that? No. So when you hear me saying it's all external input, and way down the line, like external input would be the 101, if you're familiar with university classes, the way they're structured. Dream discussion would be a 302 class, 40-something class, much further down the line.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, what I heard, and besides your blog, was you talking to a woman, I think it was, about how about dreams coming from demons, and you've just got to tell the demon, "No, we don't close the
right.
door on the demon, because you don't want these dreams." Now, I presume you're allowing also they come from angels if in that model, because there's sometimes visionary dreams. But that's what I'm referring to, this notion that they're implanted from us by entities, rather than at least some of the time generated internally by our own consciousness. So my question is this: like, you know, does that? How do you draw a line between that interpretation and our waking consciousness? Because, like many
Same.
People, I'm sure. Okay, so you don't draw a line.
No, it's all right now. You and I are having a discussion. If using the computer analogy, you think that you're thinking of what you're going to say and respond to what I'm going to say now in your head.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's what you're used to, and it's just like if I told you to stand up if you're sitting and walk across the room, you can do it without thinking about it. You take it for granted, right?
Mm-hmm.
There's a very small impulse to make you stand up. There's the impulses that you're using for thought. What you are not realizing is that nothing is happening in your head. You're broadcasting and receiving
mm-hmm.
to another place in counter space. And by the way, counter space is the bigger you are in counter space, the smaller you are here.
Mm-hmm.
Like the... what was the Doctor Who, that telephone, the police booth he had.
Mm-hmm.
But
TARDIS,
anyway,
yeah.
The TARDIS, yeah. So while you're thinking that, so you're so used to it being in your head, that you think it's really going on there. So, for example, when I'm speaking to you now, I'm taking it from another place, receiving it and projecting it through the from the psyche to the physical, psychophysical, and back and forth. And actually, we have a spiritual connection, meaning there's no material because we're speaking and not in person, right? That's spiritual.
So this is something you know theoretically or that you're experiencing? As
it's
you're
both. Both. And it's also been known from a Platonic, Eastern philosophic metaphysics from ancient times. And it's also been discussed in modern scientific circles, and it's not on the Internet, that there's nothing going on in the brain. They do know during brain surgery, if they poke certain parts, that you have a psychophysical reaction, but they cannot view any pure psycho reactions in the brain. None, not even memory. So let me just give you a hypothetical thing. Hypothetically, if we were if we weren't so technologically primitive, you and I could communicate by connecting, networking the cloud where we're both getting it from there, or asking them to do it, connect us up there. Have you ever heard of people saying, I feel connected with them no matter where they are, I don't have to speak to them?
Yeah,
that's because they're at the cloud. Imagine a cloud. You know, you know how cloud servers work. There's an actual building that they're operating. There's people running around in lab coats or whatever they're wearing, flip-flops or whatever. And they're operating the servers, and the servers have been pre-programmed like autopilot to work, you know, on cloud servers, right?
Right.
So we all have a dedicated space on the cloud server. I know it sounds kind of bizarre, and it sounds like a Greek's opinion on this, but I don't want to stress any of this because it's simply not time yet.
Yeah, well, it also sounds pretty familiar in terms of New Age stuff and collective unconscious and so on. Right?
Yeah, but unconscious, there's a problem with definitions. Let me give you an example. A lot of people complain about what they call the justice system. I think you've heard me explain that has nothing to do with law. It's the revived goddess religion. And all through history, man gets his order and his law from his priesthood. So that's all it is. But to make a long story short, anybody who's ever looking at whatever dealings they're having with state attorneys or other attorneys, the laws sometimes seem conflicting and conflating, but all you have to do is go back and look at definitions. So if you have no definitions, like if you're on a construction site and some of the crew is using metrics and some is using English standard imperial, you know, inches, you can still work because you have what's called conversion, right? I know 25.4 millimeters to an inch and so on, 454 grams to a pound, right? Mm-hmm. You can do that. But if on each, now what I'm talking about, lack of definition, is if each tape measure, a millimeter was different than the next millimeter on the other tape measure, now you're fucked.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm using that as a medical term, right?
Mm-hmm.
So this is what I see. One, engineers, when they speak, they first establish that they're used defining the terms the same way. When they say inch, mile, pound, right? A particular steel alloy, you know, if you say a 6'4", 3V titanium alloy, you know it's six parts aluminum, vanadium. They know that. They know that if someone says, I'm going to send you a 6'4", 3V alloy, when they receive it on the other end, they'll measure it. It'll be that. It won't be, you know, a 12.69, you see. So all I see is people using different definitions and all that. By the way, that is done by code. You know, in battle, if you're familiar with Sun Tzu, you win without fighting.
Mm-hmm.
If you can just be, when you have an army, which is a collective that requires coherence and cohesiveness through communication, you don't have to go after the physical part or the psychophysical. You go through the psychophysical, meaning psycho first, meaning prevent them from communicating or confuse them, and then the physical will not manifest, right? What they're supposed to be doing.
Right.
So I see that the cosmic enemies, which is fine, they have a lease. You understand, if you have an empty building as a landlord, you can lease it to a drug dealer, you could lease it to an office, you can lease it to a medical, you could lease it to a legal firm, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But usually when you lease it to someone who's a drug dealer or a human trafficker, they're not going to put up a sign outside saying that, that do that, right? You see, they're going to say we distribute toys from Asia or something, yeah?
Right.
Yeah, so you're going to have to do some forensic investigation on one of these things as well. And you'll see that nothing is as they're told. But if you're interested in dreams, supposedly, and when you say collective unconscious, when you're unconscious, then there is no dreams. What dreams are is an animation, partial animation of your consciousness. Consciousness is just unconsciousness is being like asleep or dead. There's no sensory. There is no cognitive anything quantifiable or qualifiable, right? It's just void. It's negative space, negative consciousness is unconsciousness. When you have a dream, instead of waking up fully where you realize where you are and what you have, you know, your daily routine kicks in or whatever, the dream is not that. The dream is even prior to that. It's a very, very small, faint level of consciousness. When you hear unconscious, that just means asleep or dead. So a dream is a very minimal, it's a drop. If you had a glass of water, is your consciousness full or half full? Mm-hmm. The dream would be just the moisture left after you drink the glass out, just a little bit.
Compared to when you're awake.
When you're awake, when you're conscious, right? See, everyone is fully conscious when they're awake.
Well, but
they're not aware.
I mean, this doesn't speak to my experience, though, because there's many times where I've had dreams that I experienced myself as more fully conscious than while I was awake.
No, you're more you're reading your senses more. You're reoperating. Okay, give me an example. In the New Age movement, you hear like these people are not conscious or they need to awake.
Yeah.
Right. They need to wake up. Well, if you go to bed stupid, you're going to wake up stupid.
Well, not necessarily, but yeah.
So what the hell do you want to do with a 7 billion stupid, you know, awake or asleep? It doesn't matter. You know, stupid, better off them being asleep, because stupid people tend to be dangerous. You want to inform them and give them the tools. Give them the tools. Don't sell them the tools. You see the difference? Or don't create a scarcity of tools. Give them the tools in abundance to use that knowledge.
Well, what about the training for the tools, though? Well, I mean, if they can't even recognize that the tool is a tool, then...
That's right. That's right.
That's right.
That's why you have to train them, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And the way that you don't do... And the training is done properly. I'll give you an example. When you said you got some information and you got rid of a multiple fiber, mixed fibered, and you hope you get a reward from the gods. That's, I've never said that.
It was a joke.
Oh, I know, but still, yeah. It's a matter of what it's doing the right thing. You don't do the right thing to get a reward.
I know.
Yeah, you do the right thing because guess what? It's the right thing to do.
Yeah, well, it's logical, really, to be in harmony with it, one's environment.
But it's also logical. It's also logical to want more shrunken heads if you live in a society that of headhunters.
Okay, well, it's not only logical, but there is a logic to it also, which I find is a pretty good compass for me. I mean, my trajectory, Greek, has been from atheist, just a regular guy seeking, you know, satisfaction in the social realm, to a very disillusioned human being who went on the occult path and went way too far on that and went into these huge apocalyptic belief systems and narratives and sorcerous practices and all the rest of it,
to
a kind of threshold, lingering on the threshold of Orthodox Christianity, because that seemed like an antidote to the, you know, the left-hand path of occultism, which was the point that I came across you, not coincidentally, I'm sure. But the point of all this is that for me to hear you spin these grand cosmic narratives, a lot of which resonate with me at like a, I would say, a deep visceral level, but I can't necessarily extricate that from psychological patterns, you know, neuroses that want to believe in these narratives. Like when I hear you talk about the Antichrist and the gods and the kill shots and the end times, that stuff makes me feel really, really good. It doesn't make me feel despairing or afraid, right?
You can call it end times. I don't use that term. Very rarely have you ever said that. I might bring it up as a criticism of the end times, but I don't use it. What I talk about those things the same way I speak. In the early 80s, I found out that computers were getting there were more companies making smaller, more accessible computer technology, because I was trained in punch card, Fortran, COBOL, and all that. In the right, you understand, this is back in the days. And I had a suggestion that it should be used to do real-time inventory. In other words, the cash register should be the computer, because I knew people and they had shoe shops, and they had to dedicate quite a few man hours doing inventory, how many shoes were sold. They didn't know. But if you had the cash register that subtracted the shoes that were sold in real time, you could actually at any point of the day knew you had to reorder instead of waiting at the end of the week when inventory is done. So I kept telling people that this computer thing is going to be very important in commerce. Mm-hmm. I never said it's because you're going to have an information age, because obviously the people are not going to be – this is not an informational-based society no matter what they tell you, because people don't care about that. Mm. You know, it's food, clothing, and shelter. So, you know, I've run into people much later and says, oh, you were prophetic about the computer age. I said, I never said that. Mm. I never said computer age. Never. That's ridiculous. Just another tool. And I actually met with Wozniak, one of the people from Apple, back in the day and all that, regarding that. And he showed me this little image of a thing, a recycle bin of a garbage can. And I said, oh, how cute. But that's not where it's going to be going. And I was wrong about that, because it obviously did. People want the, you know, little icons, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Right.
So essentially, when I speak about the end times... and also like stirring the shit pot and all that, or whatever. Mm-hmm. It's already happened.
Mm-hmm.
Practically, you don't have a beginning and an end as such. If you were to shoot a two-hour film, you don't get 2 hours of film. You get 2 hours and 10 minutes, because you need 10 minutes of credits. It's the right thing to do. Mm-hmm. You're in the credits portion. Time already ended almost 21 years ago. Okay. Well, you're not waiting for the end. You're waiting for the mop, the cleanup. So, dropping a glass of milk on the floor with broken glass and milk is not the end. It is the end of the glass of milk. You're not going to – you could still sop up some milk like a dog. Mm-hmm. But now the next thing is what? The cleanup.
But in that – I mean, that metaphor is kind of contradictory, because credits are in a movie, and a movie's all about the narrative, and you're talking about this Antichrist, and that's the climax, right? Within a narrative framework,
no.
The Antichrist is the climax. It's not the credits.
No, the climax is that man reaching after time ends, all of the things that man has to be given, so he's without excuse later. See, because if they came and mopped it up now,
yeah,
people, when they're reanimated, resurrected, reincarnated, however you want, it's all accurately to say that.
Yeah.
They're going to say we never had a chance to employ policies that would make things better, you see.
So you're now saying the information's in the credits, but the credits, it's already over when the credits are running, so how is it supposed to act on it at that point?
That's why I keep saying, why bother? Food, clothing, and shelter, and just watch the show. People don't even want to watch credits anymore. I remember when I worked in film a little bit, I was very interested in the credits.
Well, okay. So, yeah, you're finding out what's going on, who's behind the scenes, I guess.
Oh, it could be really interesting. You might think the thing was shot in New York. It was really shot in New Zealand or Canada.
Mm-hmm.
Right? You might think, you know, this XYZ, and it ends up being ABC. And and you might say, well, I don't trust those credits. I think they're a lie also. That's fine, but you need to still be aware of the information that's put out. That's why people tell me this, that, and the other about how do you know this is good. I said, I don't. I just look at all the information. I try to create a hierarchy, like military intelligence. When they spy on people, they categorize it. You know, if the guy's favorite color is red, that's much lower than the guy just got a $50,000 bank transfer from some Saudi. That's a higher bit of information to discuss, you see. You see what I mean?
Well, so the reason people don't stay for the credits is because the show is over. Like, they were there
to
suspend disbelief and get lost in the story, and the credits are just basically telling them that it was just a movie and this is, you know. So that
people
that,
know.
Yeah.
People know the show is over. I did a, when I was young, dumb, and full of cum years ago. I went down to these things called shopping malls, and they have food courts, and that's the most active general place where the egress and entry into the building is, at the food court, right? I stood there with a clipboard, looking very handsome with a tie and dress shoes, looking very smart with someone else, right? And so, we're conducting a survey. It's very simple. I'm not going to take much of your time. Do you believe we're in the end times, and why? And 99% of people says, yes, I do believe we're in the end times, but 0 or 1% said why. When I was growing up, you had milk strikes, truck strikes, sanitation strikes, strikes of every kind, right? You don't have that anymore because it doesn't matter, you see. There's no more negotiating now. Now it's just tell us what you want and maybe we'll do it. If we don't feel like doing it, we just won't.
Who's saying that?
The collective, the headhunters.
So why are you spinning this narrative then about the Antichrist and the end times, or why are you?
I never said the Antichrist. There's a world leader.
You did say the Antichrist.
Well, I bring that up to attach what I'm saying, so I'm not being cryptic, because people have been mentally modeled to that figure. Right. But you're going to have, it's really, the term is instead of Christ, instead of an anointed one. Anointed one is like a king, by the way, a leader that has divine rule. The Asians will tell you all about that, you know, in the Showa traditions and that, right? So the, and also in England and Europe, you know, the king's divine right to rule. That's what I mean by that. And let me put it this way. There's so many memes developed around that. When it happens, if it's the understanding that people have, they're going to cry foul. But I'm telling you, it's all going to happen in secret. It'll be right in front of you, you see. It's not going to be just a quote-unquote antichrist figure or a young leader. It's going to be surrounded by a group of older people that are going to seem very, very spiritually aware and awake, and will also have command of enough of the environment to suggest that there will be, more than suggest, that there will be supernatural paranormal activity surrounding this group.
Okay, so, I mean, this is all fascinating stuff, but why is it relevant if it's just the credits?
Oh, it's relevant, for the sake of efficiency. Years ago I worked I would consider him a mentor, from this man who had a company called Hi E Engineering. It was HI-E. And he wanted me to take over the company. We were doing some very esoteric machining, esoteric materials. I was there for 4 months, and like a fool, I said, Harlan, why do you call the company Hi-E? That would be like one of the first things you'd ask, right? But it never occurred to me to ask, you know, because the logo was HI-E. And I said, what does that mean? And he says, well, E stands for efficiency, and high means a lot of it. Right? He was a southern man from Tennessee, right? So it's about efficiency. So when people say, oh, the world's going to end here with the nuclear war, World War III in September or whatever, never mind. Ain't going to happen that way.
Efficiency for what? I mean, efficiency in what?
Putting your energy into all the mindfulness that people put into the bullshit geopolitical and social movements that you're going to see and have been seeing. Y2K, 2012.
Okay, but I'm not that. I mean, I'm your listener.
No, I know you're not.
So none of that has any interest to me. And
that's fine. I try not to be specific to the individual, and I try to give very little of my own personal aspect. And I try to be as general and universal as possible.
Why wouldn't you want to be specific to the individual, though? I mean, particularly now that you're talking
to Sam brought that up in the last because we're not down that road yet, and you'd have to send me your contact information so I could send you a bill so you could reciprocate the value of it.
Well, that's assuming it's not a mutually reciprocative
dialogue, right? I used to have Skype conversations, and one guy would sit and be really quiet, and I said, who are you? Why are you here? I thought, you know, you actually spoke very negatively. I said, the Greek is an asshole.
Mm-hmm.
But you do. I don't take that personally. I just say that the perception that you have of the Greek is an asshole. If you said the Greek has an asshole, that would be more accurate, right? But nonetheless, he says, "Well, because I don't have to go see my psychotherapist anymore, it saves me $150 a week because I get more out of listening to you." And I said, "Well, fuck, man, give me your contact information so I could send you a bill for half of that at least. It should be twice because it's twice as effective." Do you see my point?
Well, yeah, except right at the start of this conversation, you said you weren't that interested in how you affected people, what effect you were having, and that's anti-therapeutic, really. The therapeutic process involves an awareness of transference and all the rest of it.
Well, the thing is, because when you do something, you know, even Scripture says when you give, you should give anonymously.
Yeah.
You know, if you were to give, you know, don't get a plaque or, you know, just give anonymously. People misunderstand that. It's anonymously when you give to the temple, let's say, you know, or the hierarchy, you know, as tribute, you do it, yeah?
Mm-hmm.
You do anonymously. It doesn't say you have to give anonymously when you give to individuals. The reason I said that it doesn't matter how I affect people is because you can't be bothered if it's a one-size-fits-all. If you're selling T-shirts, I'm not selling, but an example, if you're giving out T-shirts or hats and says one-size-fits-all, you're not going to stop and think too much about what if it doesn't fit this little baby or this really big fat man. You see, it's general enough that most people will put it on and it'll serve its purpose.
I look good without a shirt on and I don't lose my composure.
That's a stumbling block for me because I don't believe in a one size fits all formula. I don't suppose.
I don't either, but it does exist. if you go to the headhunters and you don't have to discuss the color of wallpaper in their kitchen, you could just discuss perhaps what they all have in common, which is the aspect of being referred to as a society of headhunters. They each have different colored wallpaper in their kitchen, and they each have different colored cars, let's say, right? So that okay. I want to address that. But what I do, for example, when I work with industry, if I work with an oil company or an electronics company or a automotive company or whatever, they're all the same, right? Because they all go under the blanket of industry, but yet they're all very specific, and even more specific of the different fields that they cover. They're approaching me not only for the general field like automotive stuff, electronic stuff, or oil stuff. They're approaching me for a very, very, very narrowly focused specific thing within that field, you see. And that's one aspect also that can be done. So, like, I think with you, it would be dreams. You brought up dreams several times. So,
well, that, I mean, that's just a way in, really. I mean, that's just, and it's really just one example. My, like,
oh yeah, I understand.
I'm interested in the source of information, as far as
you are the source,
right? Okay, so
very often when I say to people to be lawful, so who makes up the law? I said you do. You make it up. You do it. But you can't just make it up, because you're gonna, there's a penalty for fiction. Right?
Mm-hmm.
What you do is you find out how you're wired, and you get it from your God, or you get it from what you call a super ultra dynamic ultimate being. That's why most atheists, you know, I ask, do you believe in the laws? So you don't believe in any gods? He says, no, I don't. Well, do you believe in the laws of the state? Sure, I do. I said, well, then, you know, the state is your God. They provide one for you. And April 1st is your holiday.
Mm-hmm.
So you can't escape it. So just like you cannot escape Apple protocols in an Apple computer, or, you know, or Linux has other protocols. It's to escape, to get, you know, food, clothing, and shelter. You cannot escape breathing air, can you? So,
well, let's bring it back to this one size fits all thing for a moment, because you,
yes.
You agreed on that, but then at the same time you had this qualifier, and that you said you're speaking to a collective. You didn't say that, but that was the inference that I got, and as if everybody was the same. And
yes.
Okay, so my impression of what you're doing is that you're speaking to everyone as if they were morons, right? And you're saying repeatedly.
Sure, for several reasons.
Well, I'll just complete that. You're constantly asserting the fact that there's nothing out there that's true that has any value. It's 100% bullshit, except what you're saying. So how does that, how do you square that? Because, like,
no, that's what you're saying could be woven into seeming accurate, but this is what I'm yeah. basically saying. There is something that, again, back to the individual that has a mental model, right? You're brought up believing things the way things are. And I'm telling you, none of that is the way that it is. And it's not because of some occulted knowledge, or it takes a special individual
mm-hmm.
to discover this. All you have to do is, the things that you tend to believe in or interact with, can you define them? And how do you find how they're defined? Because it probably done in the past. And if you're creating something in situ on the spot, you can define it as you're doing. But most things are not that way.
Mm-hmm.
Look up what these things really mean. I used to press on etymology versus dictionaries. Look at what words mean, and then you'll...
So this is very language-centered, then.
Language and practical. You know, like, for example, if you take any field, which the most important thing I suggest to people is the human body, because if you eliminate that, you simply won't be here. You'll cease to exist as you do now.
Yeah.
So you better find out how your own body works, right? If you're told that you're a filter bag, you know, you absorb things mm-hmm. and secrete things, and you're full of pressure,
mm-hmm.
That's about as much bullshit as anything can handle. You know, the bullshit meter is off the scale on that.
Right. So, but so, I mean, there's such a sea of information and disinformation out there. And as you say, like, we have a body to refer to. So our body can presumably tell us what's going on. And that, wouldn't that be possible independent of information and definition and etymology
sure.
and all that stuff?
Sure, but also you can do it from this. There's always, when you have a quote-unquote group of people, not the like the Gustav Le Bon crowd, which he calls morons as well, but there's always going to be someone in the group, whether it's, you know, when I say group, three or more, because two would be a couple. So three or more people, there's always going to be, when a situation is presented to a group, there's going to be always someone, if not all, let's say, that will rise up to one aspect of the situation more than another, right? You know, like the taller person will reach a little higher than the shorter person, but the shorter person might have better skills in math. So you tend to find what people are good at and you work them all together. So when it comes to the human body, if we want to define it, well, a lot of grunt work, you know, physical rote labor has been done in what's called anatomy. I don't suggest people start doing cadaver research. As a matter of fact, when something dies, it is radically different than when it's alive, right? So if you start looking at anatomy, and it is glaringly obvious that when you look at the lumina of the intestine, that nothing goes through there. It's built like a steel-belted truck tire.
So what do you mean when you look at it?
Well, through anatomy. You know, what's been illustrations like Gray's Anatomy, for example?
Mm-hmm. So you trust that particular source?
Well, you don't. If you want to validate it or verify it, you can happen to associate yourself with someone who is about to do cadaver research with the appropriate equipment and ask them to validate that. In other words, when they have not performed the research yet, but when they do perform it, can they please return to you to substantiate this what's been put out?
Did you do that?
Oh, yeah. I've done it, yeah. And also, see, I've grown up at a time where in biology class it was not unusual for them to present you with a frog that you dissected. I don't know if you're – I don't think you're that old, are you?
Actually, I am, yeah. And I couldn't do any of the sciences. I was so bad at them and so bored by them that they let me actually quit that aspect of my schooling. So,
well, that's good. Unless I tell anyone who's got more than eighth grade education has done irreparable damage, probably you'll never recover from it. It doesn't mean you can't compensate for it.
Yeah. Well, I didn't pay attention, really, so I don't know how true that is. But anyway.
Yeah, it's all bullshit as to conform to the mental model. The reason why politicians and entertainment and religions are so bad is because they're accommodating the mindset of the people. If everything that you know is a lie, let's say, you can only resonate with a lie. The truth will be dissonant to you. It's out of frequency.
Right. So where does the buck stop? Because the people were created by the gods. So, I mean, it's all just, right? So.
Because the building that known as the people and the world has been leased out to the drug dealers and the human traffickers.
Who were created by the gods, too.
And if you don't like that, you can have plenty of time to deal with the gods later and say, why did you put us through this?
So, I mean, how necessary are these demarcations? Because you're saying that even waking consciousness is externally sourced because we're part of this continuum. The gods presumably are part of a continuum, even though you talk about them as individuals, like this multiplicity. But, you know, is there a distinction between the gods' existence and their function? Probably not. And between our existence as a function of their existence?
Yes.
Right? So how necessary is this sort of demarcation, which creates this grand narrative with figures of fascination? That's one of the things that I wrestle with, because that's where my already installed mental model, that's what it converts all of this information into, is just a more epic, more obsessive kind of narrative to be living, which isn't helpful.
Not to air philosophical, but would you believe me if I told you there is more to the universe and existence that is unseen than seen? And a very simple example is, you know, you have billions upon billions of cells in the body, but you don't see it as such.
Yeah.
And I'm not talking about that, but that's just a quantifiable way. There is a qualitative and quantitative existence that we are not aware of. The human eye, we only see things based on the structure of the eyeball, that fleshy, watery sphere in our eye. If you're a spirit being and you don't have that fleshy eyeball, you don't see colors and things the way we do. Doesn't mean you don't see them at all, you see. So now we have the primary, through primacy and dynamicism or dynamics, superior beings that don't see things the way we see them.
Mm-hmm. Okay, yes, theoretically. I mean,
it's a hypothesis and a theory. In other words, the conclusion will be after the all of the measuring is finished, right? And how can you measure quality?
Right.
Very difficult.
Exactly.
You know, certain quantities of certain things will affect the quality. If you have bacteria in water, for example.
I mean, is there a value, is there a merit in measuring quality and quantifying quality as opposed to just embodying it?
that, unfortunately, the quality measurement comes from being fit and proper, doing the right thing, the concept of law.
It comes from a concept.
Yes, it's a concept, because, in other words, it's dictated through the psyche, through the mind.
So you're saying that if you don't understand this and if you haven't defined it, you can't embody it?
No, of course not. That's why, but there is an innate primitive...
I mean, if animals can, why wouldn't humans...
Well, animals are very different. They come pre-downloaded. It's like buying a computer and everything's pre-uploaded or downloaded to it already. When you've heard the analogy, if you have a small puppy, a month old, raised by gorillas to maturity, if you were to adapt that dog, you wouldn't know it was raised by gorillas. It would act like a dog. But if you had an adult human mm-hmm. that was raised by gorillas from 3 months old, he would sit on your kitchen table and throw a poop right there and grunt at you.
Mm-hmm.
You see, because humans, we don't have any downloads, very little, if not any, basically, to mention that defines what we call being human, other than the anthropomorphic form.
What about a genetic, whatever, you know, the DNA?
That is a field. That is a field that is so spurious and so erroneous, it's bizarre. I try to avoid that. I like to use the word hereditary and genetics also, perhaps, but the DNA is not something that's being accurately portrayed in the public mind, just like money is not portrayed, just like many of the physical sciences are misinterpreted. You know, the physical body, medicine, is completely misinterpreted to the people.
Mm. And what about our ancestral line, like the,
very
the,
important.
The connection to that? That's in the present, no? Like you and I, our ancestors, are speaking now as much as you and I, the individuals, maybe.
Right. In other words, further down the line, yeah. Uh-huh.
Yeah. So the line is all present here in this one.
But our ancestors are dead. And the gods do provide a disconnection from them, because there is a lineage. You know, like in certain countries, if a family has a debt, the parents that incurred that debt, when they die, the children are still resolved to settle it, right? And
right.
You know, we're talking about when there were substance-based money. I hope you understand that there is no – it's an impossibility of law to be in debt in this modern society unless you agree to it, right? No one can prove any – anyway.
Right.
I've had various discussions on money, but I tend to not discuss it because people nod their heads. I've had many discussions with high-level engineers in various industries, and they're all agreeing. And then after the meeting, I say, well, can you please just summarize a few things? And I'll say, well, it sounded good. I'd never heard it before, but that's all I can say. Mm-hmm. And I thought he was joking.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, let me look at your notes. And he just had some, you know, stuff. I said, what? He took notes on it. What does that mean? He says, you know, I wrote that, and I don't understand it. Then I said, holy shit, this is cosmic. This is, they're being censored.
Mm.
You see what I mean?
Yeah. So you're comparing this to the ancestral line, that we can say no to it, or what?
Yes, of course. It's actually something that I suggest people do constantly, because...
But isn't something trying to get resolved through... through our lives, ancestrally?
There's several. No, there. Yes, there is. Because see, the gods are a great number counter. They're bean counters, you know, accountants.
Mm-hmm.
And in their realm, they have a concept of debt based on our behavior, and they carry that over several generations.
So wait a minute. That's not a concept. If they're talking about the gods, it's not a conceptual thing. It's simply the reality, not simply, but the reality
that
they have established through their own being.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah, and they communicate it. Just like you have two neighboring societies, you may not be living in either one, but you know that they know enough about each other that they're very different. Or they're, in other words, if you have two parallel societies, usually even on Earth, they do know a little bit about each other, about what makes them similar and what makes them different, right?
Mm-hmm.
You
yeah.
can imagine, yeah? You know, like a communist and a capitalist country, they'll say, well, here it's communism, we do this, but we still have to eat like you do,
mm-hmm.
see? No, the thing is, it's very interesting. I would like to bow out of discussing. I would like to most of myself would just like to be completely anonymous, shut everything down, as if, you know. And I'm not going to deny I ever said any of this or provide any more, whatever. But part of me is saying that might be the best thing to do if you do contemplate and consider the state of humanity, not just now, but how it's been. But on the other hand. There's a sense of personal responsibility that one might have, not to bring out something that is completely unique, because it might be unique if you haven't noticed it yet, but once you notice it, how unique is it? especially if it's obvious. So there's a level of importance to certain things. Here, I'll give you an example. If you, that's too long. Make it short. It's a scenario. Mm-hmm. But essentially, if people are not noticing what is obvious, meaning obvious are things that within your sensory perception and beyond your sensory perception, because you tend to interact with them on a daily basis, right?
Mm-hmm.
On a daily. And if you can't define those things or don't know why you're doing them or the history of those things or the effect of the way you're doing them because you don't know how they're defined or the history of those things, mm-hmm. that is something that screams out to be discussed or brought forward. And that's the only reason why I'm speaking. You know, you've heard of the term free energy, yeah?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, these things exist, right? And it's not a theory. It's they exist, right? Why don't you have them? Why is any doctor you run into will tell you that digestion occurs because of electrical impulses in the body? Okay. All of them will do. Gastroenterologists, all of them say that. So where is their electromedicine? Doesn't exist, right? You want to talk about any of the physical scientists, ask a scientist to define a field. He'll tell you it's a wave.
Well, isn't there a way
to... A wave is not what something is. A wave is what something does.
It just seems as though it's like... You know, in those myths where you have to sort the seas and there's just an impossible number, like it seems as though you're addressing like mankind's delusion or, you know, sleeping state on a point by point basis by looking at the endless, you know,
sure.
sea of errors that we're swimming in, as if you could just correct all those errors and accumulatively lead man to awakening, as opposed to why not just lead man directly to awakening by getting him to see what's actually in front of his face.
They're misconceptions, because if you go to the medical references or the physics references or all these other references, you will find the truth in the references, but they're not producing that.
Mm. But it just seems to me that, for me anyway, part of the problem is that we're lost in a sea of definitions, not just because they're false definitions, but because we're so compulsively trying to define everything and pursue concepts rather than simply just land in the moment and be here.
It's a dummy load. If you had a plan to go somewhere and develop a group of beings that need 6,000 years in their own screwed up, fucked up ways, which is normal, for 6,000 years, they have to stay put. If you had, you know, 7 billion children in a place center, they had to be there for 6 hours, no matter what, you're going to make sure they have enough toys and chocolate pudding and all this stuff to keep them busy.
I suppose none of it's bad for their health.
Yeah, but the thing is, I've been saying lately more, the gods don't care about your health. They don't care about your physical.
Yeah.
They care about you being a spiritual place, or a certain amount
of
spirits.
I mean, see, that to me, that's an example of an unnecessary or an arbitrary categorization, like that the gods don't care about us physically. I don't believe that. I mean, maybe they don't perceive us as being limited to physical, so maybe they don't care about what we think we want and need. Fine. But if they're gods, they're going to have a holistic view of the whole of existence. And perceive that in order to lead us or whatever they're doing towards the, you know, our potential as gods, they've got to consider every element of our experience.
They do consider it. And when I say they don't care, what I'm doing is saying it in a poignant way to address the people that usually say, well, if God exists, why does he allow so much suffering, death, and all this other stuff? I said, well, it's obvious.
But that's a pretty low bar. I mean, considering the level of awareness that you seem to be at.
It's all low bar.
Why are you lowballing so much?
Well, I'll tell you why. Because what happens is, for example, when I discuss scripture, people say, well, what should I read? I said, read all of it. Because even if you understand the languages of preservation and more of a source document, most of the people you're going to be interacting with are going to be familiar with the crap you're trying to resolve. So you have to know the crap also.
Yeah. Well, that makes sense, but you're not. I mean, you're talking, you're doing these streams, and you're addressing. I mean, you could address any level that you wanted to address, because they're not there. Or, I mean, you're talking to me now, so that's different.
I do. I do. In industry, when I do work, and people do approach me for very specific things, or we're operating on a level where we have a reciprocation. In other words, they're asking me to provide source materials, experimentation, and further thought. That's going to take me 2 weeks. I say, well, I have to eat, and clothing and shelter for that. And by the way, you have a faculty of 70 engineers that cost you about $18 million a year. And what I'm going to do is going to best everything they're doing. So what is that worth?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not just doing it for money. As a matter of fact, some guy says, oh, we paid the Greek the equivalent of $13,000 an hour, and he says he's doing it for money. I just gave it all away. But I don't want to start talking about myself on anything.
Mm-hmm.
So the thing is, no. Have you ever heard the term, if it's free, it can't be good. If it's expensive, it must be good or better, yeah?
Yeah.
The headhunters, yeah?
Yeah.
If you want to impress a headhunter, do you bring him a box of chocolates or some shrunken heads?
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Although it be distasteful, I'm telling you, can you be objective enough to see that the shrunken heads are more proper in that situation?
Right. So who?
So in other words, that's why I bring up the distasteful nature, like of when people ask, why do the gods allow this and that? If you look at the ancient writs, for example, gods have no problem putting 85,000 Assyrians to sleep, meaning that they're never going to wake up, right, permanently. It doesn't say, well, too bad we had to do that.
Right.
You see? There's other places in there where the Christ is asked, well, why did the Romans kill all these men? What did they do? What sin did they commit? You know, what misdeed or misgivingness?
So,
and he says there's no reason at all. He says, well, why did the tower fall and kill all these men? He says, we don't need a reason to do that. Wow. And I started meditating on this, and I'm like, where was there ever remorse?
There are passages in the at least the King James Version where God expresses remorse for what he's done.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'd like to see that one day. Right. I'm not saying right now, and I'm not putting your feet to the fire. But
no.
If you read that carefully, you're going to find out that what they're interested in is who we are. And, you know, our bodies and other things are interchangeable. You've heard of organ transplants and things like that. But who we are, our spirit, our personality, what makes us us, what makes you you, is extremely unique, so unique that it trumps what they call DNA, right? Because when you look at DNA, there are 111 comparisons. 68 have to be, you know, considered. Yeah, if you're familiar with the RNA-DNA analysis.
Yeah, vaguely.
And they do play that against the people's ignorance, you know, like in legal circles. They'll say we did DNA testing, and if you look, they didn't at all. They just lie about it. Because, you know, if you do more than an 111 or 111 group comparison with any human DNA, well, the only thing they're going to come back and tell you for sure is that you all have the same mother, came from the same motherly genetic, that's all. Doesn't matter what race, color, creed, or whoever you are. That's what they're going to tell you generally, right?
Right.
So how come this is not discussed? Also, do you know that there are cells, various types of cells, where the DNA was removed and they replicated just fine, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, this is not discussed either, of course. You know, I like using 9/11 as an example. Do you know they say blame it all on the Arabs and Osama bin Laden? Do you know that those people were never listed on any of the government agency websites as being wanted for anything? Mm-hmm. It's all done on television. It's a media stunt.
Mm-hmm.
A man was suing Fox News for libel, and the federal court ruled that you can't sue them for libel because they're an entertainment industry. But yet people are relying on them to run their daily lives. Now, I'm telling you that what they teach in university has to conform to what's in entertainment.
That I can believe. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, in the broad stroke, but again, I mean, it's...
As a matter of fact, I've seen recent textbooks cite things in the entertainment industry, just like in the alternative media, they like citing things like The Matrix. It's bizarre. I would suggest that you're coming upon a time where the knowledge of the gods will be increased for a short time, by the way, objective, not religious. And, actually, when you get knowledge of the gods, you will see the religions of what they are. It's a subculture.
Thank you.
Right, well, that's the end of the first part of this conversation with Greek, which was 3 hours and 20 minutes, and then there's another conversation I had with him on his own stream. If you're hearing this, it's because I decided to air it. I've been consulting and reflecting and ruminating on my experience with the Greek and the knowledge or the information or the quasi-information that he provides, and I haven't reached any firm conclusion, but as I say, if you're listening to this, then I did reach the conclusion to air it, which I'm not entirely sure about at this moment in time. I'm just creating the podcast, and then I will decide once I've listened to it with some others. But the reason is I think it's probably, hopefully, clear through the course of my dialogue with the Greek, my reasons, my misgivings about bringing attention to what he's doing. I haven't linked to his domain in the show notes for this same reason. Good luck finding the Greek online by searching for him. Yeah, if you're diligent enough, you will. Particularly, I think there's one reference towards the end of this conversation that will help you. But I think I should make it as hard as possible, because, as I said in a conversation with one of the Greek's regular participants, I feel that he's dealing in nitroglycerin, and I'm not sure that he's handling it very well. I certainly don't think he's providing the necessary tools for those he's handing it to know how to handle it. And there are those who consider, as one person anyway, that my interest in the Greek is somewhat regressive, as in a return to old fascinations with occult knowledge and power and stuff like that. And I think that they're not entirely wrong. I think that my sojourn into Greek land, Greek speak, relates not only to my, might say, flirting with Christianity of late, or Orthodox theism, but also to my attempt to complete the Lucifer unworking and to deinstall that program from all those years ago. And that much of what the Greek talks about, I'd say, is belongs to that same program, certainly the belief system that I had back then. And so this is a way for me to test just how susceptible I still am to the sort of power intoxication of dangerous or occult knowledge. So anyway, I'll leave it to the listener to decide and discern how much stock to put in the Greek's apocalypse plan, and let me know what you think in the comments or otherwise, as far as whether I go any deeper into this material or into dialoguing with the Greek. At the moment, I feel fairly neutral about it and about him. He's a very fascinating, charismatic chap, and but I don't feel that he's really embodying the sort of principles that I consider this podcast to be dedicated to embodying, those of wholeness, health, compassion, humanity or humanization, grounded values, and so on. For the first time, I've had to try and lay out the value set that the liminalist represents or tries to adhere to. Of course, it's liminal, so it's always changing, but certainly it's about mind and heart over body. Wait, I got that wrong, but certainly it's about body and soul and heart over mind stuff. That was a very Freudian slip, I'll have to leave it in. Right, well, you can listen, if you did hear this one, then you'll probably get to listen to the following parts next midweek, and then next week, and then I suspect a week after that. This is the Liminalist Podcast Between. Thanks for listening, and thanks to recent donators who I shall name Vikström Dave and Simon. Thank you.